You've heard me talk about Morning Kick, used by former karate champion Chuck Norris. It's a daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes similar to strawberry lemonade, and I enjoy it. I know I don't eat as many vegetables as I should, but Morning Kick has helped me make up for that, and I feel great. I have more energy and better digestion. It's an easy part of my morning routine. My wife started taking it as well. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/Harris for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/Harris today. Hey everyone, we are now live on the Conversations That Matter podcast. I'm going to be joined later on today by a Southern Baptist pastor, Jeff Wright. He's going to make the case for conservatives to stay in the convention, and I want you to hear what he has to say. I'll probably ask some questions. I'm not going to be easy. I'm going to ask the hard questions. At least that's my plan. We have some folks lined up from Patreon who are going to weigh in, comment, share their questions as well later in the podcast. But while I am waiting for Jeff, and there was a little bit of miscommunication. It was my fault. I assume everyone's on Eastern time, and that's just not the case, especially for some of you, most of you in the middle of the country. And I just failed to let him know the exact time. And so he's an hour off. And so anyway, he's coming on. But I wanted to start because I said we would start around 11:35. And it's a few minutes after that. A few announcements for you all that I wanted to share anyway. Some good things, some positive things, some encouraging things. We need that right now. There's no doubt with everything else that's happening around us. But TruthScript is coming along. The TruthScript website, which is it's really our answer to the Gospel Coalition, I guess you could say. It's the kind of content that is shareable, digestible. We have right now a featured article about really in the theme of Father's Day from Pastor Seth Brickley, The Courage of My Father Remembered. And then you can look back. There's a number of different topics on different things. We did even address the Southern Baptists briefly. Mark Coppinger wrote a piece on manliness about a week ago. So anyway, there's a lot of good stuff there. And I want to let you also know about a conference we have coming up. Actually, this one we already just did, the Be Not Conform conference. That was over the weekend. But TruthScript has a men's conference coming up. And we got a great lineup. It's Tom Rush, who's a trustee at Southern Seminary, former military, evangelist, pastor. We got Andrew Rappaport, who's an evangelist. A.D. Robles, of course, is going to be there. Lance Nitohara, who is a culinary chef. He's actually won Chopped, the television show, twice. And he is a Christian and probably one of the few Christians who's overt with his Christianity in the culinary industry. He's going to be sharing some very positive things about how he's seen the Lord move on the Culinary Institute of America. And then my father and Pastor Scott Harris is going to be there as well. You can go to truthscript.com/conferences. And if you click on that, it's going to give you the link to signing up and all of that. It's a steal, guys. We got the price down to as low as we can possibly make it. It's really for at cost. We're not really doing anything extra. So putting anything extra in there. So we just want you to come, and if people want to donate to it, we should have, I think, within the next day that option available at TruthScript to donate if you want to expand what we're doing. Also want to let you know about this. This is Equipping the Persecuted. I mentioned it on the podcast before. In fact, I had an email yesterday or the day before about another terrorist attack in Nigeria, and it's just so sad to me to hear what's happening to our brothers and sisters in Nigeria. But there is an organization, and they're really the only ones that, as far as I'm aware, are doing this kind of thing in Nigeria. That is Equipping the Persecuted. They are giving they are meeting the humanitarian, as we often categorize it, needs, such as food, water, shelter, clothing. They just built an orphanage. It's definitely needed. And this is for brothers and sisters in Christ. But of course, they are also sharing the good news of Jesus Christ, even correcting some of the theology. In Nigeria, there's a lot of prosperity gospel type of theology that's being pushed out there. And so the guys that are equipping the persecuted are also trying to give helpful corrections to those kinds of things. But they're giving they're offering tactical gear in the sense of like walkie talkies and body armor and just things that can help training that can help prevent or at least minimize the damage of these attacks. So this is an organization, if you're especially in the light of the Southern Baptist Convention and many of you who are leaving or who have left, and maybe you're not giving to the North American Mission Board or the IMB anymore, maybe an organization like Equipping the Persecuted is an organization to consider giving to. So wanted to plug them as well. Well, we have Jeff right now. Jeff, welcome to the Conversations That Matter podcast.
Hey, John. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. I'm sorry about the mix-up. I just assume everyone's on Eastern time, and that's my bad. Most of our listeners are probably in the middle of the country. So where are you coming from? What state? And tell me, tell us all a little bit about yourself. I know you're a pastor. What capacity are you involved in the Southern Baptist Convention?
Okay, well, to start off with, actually, I think that's my fault. I'm the one who asked. And with my own podcasts, I always think you got to talk time zone. But when I asked, I didn't think. So that's on me. I appreciate you doing that. I'm in Tennessee, right in the middle of the state. I live backed up to a family farm. We have dairy and beef cattle. I've been pastoring what they would call senior pastor for 17 years now, and did youth ministry for 5 before that. My involvement in the SBC is as a former true believer who became dissident and who wants to see this thing either recovered or profitably closed so it doesn't become a version, and I'll elaborate on this later if you'll allow me, but it doesn't become a version of what Princeton became when Machen left. So that's where I'm coming from. And John, I know I'm talking a lot here at the beginning, but if you'll allow me, I need to say something to you publicly.
Sure.
I think back in the day, you and I could both be called sort of the early adopters on the dissident wing of the Southern Baptist Convention. You saw it more clearly than I did. I was this naive guy thinking, wow, we can fix this with the channels they say to use. And, they don't know what they're doing. This is error. Somebody will correct them. And so when I saw what you were doing, I was skeptical. You know, we crossed paths a couple times, and I think our interactions were friendly, but I certainly wasn't a supporter of what you're doing. And it was when Jim Hamilton went at you full ad hominem trying to destroy you that I thought, you know what? I should have thrown in with John a long time ago. And so, man, I'm sorry. You saw it more clearly than I did, quicker than I did. And I wish I'd have been throwing wind in your sails earlier on.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, Jeff. For those who are newer to the podcast and you don't know what Jeff is talking about, just very briefly, Russell Fuller was a professor at Southern Seminary. He was fired. And it looks like, and according to Russell Fuller, this was for his conservative beliefs. I did some interviews with him, and when I released those, and really it was just supposed to be Russell Fuller giving his information, the response was, you had a bunch of guys from Southern Seminary, but led by one of the professors there, Jim Hamilton, attack me personally and try to paint me as a racist. They looked at things that I had written in the past where I supported the keeping of Confederate monuments and that kind of thing, and tried to paint me as a racist for that. But they didn't really ever address the issues. And so I just need to clarify that, because I'm realizing that there's a lot of new listeners who aren't privy to they're waking up now. And maybe I want to hear your thoughts on that, Jeff. There's a lot of people waking up, and this is the numbers game. There's also a lot of churches leaving, but there's also churches that are saying, hey, wait a minute, I didn't sign up to be to pay for these legal fees that are coming from the abuse victims who want to sue the Southern Baptist Convention. And so they weren't paying attention. Now they are. What can you tell me about that? I mean, are you encouraged that there's more people waking up than leaving? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm definitely encouraged that there's more people waking up. I'm not as encouraged by the leaving. I get it. It's odd at my church. I've gone from the guy saying, man, we really need to have a skeptical eye on the SBC to now being the guy who's got his foot on the brake saying, let's not jump out just yet. So I think people are right to be concerned. I think they're right to say, I won't put my money into this. I also think churches need to be taking formal steps to try to distance themselves from the Southern Baptist Convention if they're a participant. The Alliance Defending Freedom is somebody you should reach out to and start talking to them about that. Because one of the things the bad guys are trying to do is lie to the federal government, who doesn't understand their polity. Almost no one understands their polity. Everybody assumes we're like the Roman Catholic Church or the Anglican Church. There's a top-down hierarchy that sort of controls everything down. We're incredibly unique, even as the largest Protestant denomination. So nobody understands their polity, not even all of our own participants, but not religion writers, not federal authorities. Well, you've got the bad guys in the SBC lying to them about our organization in a way that sounds very credible to them because they think of the Roman Catholic Church. So I think churches that either are staying or leaving, you need to be working through publishing documents and statements saying we are an autonomous church. We voluntarily participate in the SBC, but we are not governed by the Southern Baptist Convention. So that's a long way of saying I'm encouraged people are waking up. I wish there weren't so many leaving. And I can make my pitch on that front here or maybe after we talk through some of those questions, but I can follow up.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions and we won't probably be able to answer them all today, which is fine. But I definitely do want you to make your pitch for staying in the convention. You mentioned something and I had a question now, forgetting what it was, because there's a lot there. And I'm trying to, man, I lost it. Oh, well.
Well, let me run back through it real quick. You know, we don't want to leave the bad guys with another Princeton. They're trying to lie about our polity,
right,
which nobody
right.
understands.
Yeah. So the polity thing, I guess, is what I wanted to ask you briefly about, because you just mentioned that no one understands the polity. And that seems to be similar to what's happened in the United States, more broadly speaking. You go from this federal republic and then more power gets concentrated in the center. And now the Constitution, in some ways, at least on questions of federalism, is a dead document. It just doesn't really matter anymore. And I hear people insist sometimes, conservatives, you know, we are a federal republic. Federal government can't tell you what to do, but yet the federal government is telling you what to do and people are complying because if they don't, there's consequences. And I'm wondering if something similar on a smaller level is taking place here, where it's like effectively you could go back to the founding documents and say, no, this is what the SBC is. But that is changing. And there may be a point in the next few years where that's not what the SBC is, it, functionally speaking. I mean, maybe on paper, but functionally speaking, when they're paying to defend against lawsuits at local churches on the level, the national or international level. I mean, what do you think? Do you see that parallel?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm assuming I've not listened to every one of your episodes. I've listened to a bunch of them, but I'm assuming y'all have talked about Caldwell's Age of Entitlement and how the Civil Rights Act displaced the Constitution.
I think I've mentioned it before. I haven't like gone into depth, but
yeah, I think that's a compelling case. I think he's documented it well. Same deal here. The bad guys, in order to protect themselves and their financial interests, are attempting to displace historic Baptist polity. And again, in a way that increasingly secularist or even Christian judges coming from more top-down organized denominations are primed to embrace. Religious reporting is in the dumpster as much as any specific segment of journalism and legacy media right now. So those guys are going to buy it too. I think one of the things we should be doing is praying for lawsuits like the McRaney case to bolster what is historically and authentically true over and against the lies Ezel and the North American Mission Board, Russell Moore, when he was with the ERLC, put in front of the federal government.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. We've had McCraney on and his case is a little complicated, but go back to the episodes I did on that for those who are curious. Well, Jeff, this podcast is really aimed at those who are still in the SBC. And I do have some in my audience who are probably the more conservative and the right side of the conservative wing. They're looking for hope. I think some of them might feel some hope after this last convention. What can you make your pitch? What can you say to them to compel them to stay and prevent them from leaving?
Yeah. Okay. So the SBC is the largest Protestant. It's not technically a denomination, but you know, that's the easiest way to talk about it. It's the largest Protestant organization of churches. We educate, you know, on the low end, we educate something like a third of all seminarians through our six seminaries. If you start screening for mainline denominations and start having this filter of like, are they actually Christians? That number goes up really high. I've heard some estimates as high as percentages that begin with a 7. So we educate a tremendous amount of people who go to serve local churches. We have a remarkable mechanism for doing not just theological education, but domestic missions. And with mass immigration, not a fan, but as it's playing out, the Lord has brought the nations into our nation. And so we have a really good mechanism for reaching domestic and internationals through our domestic missions board. And then our international missions board is probably the most effective that's ever been seen in history. So that is worth fighting for. And let me say it in a way that I think your listeners may be particularly primed to hear. The Southern Baptist Convention, I think we're going to see documentation increasingly filtering out. The Southern Baptist Convention was targeted for dissolution and subversion, basically by Soros. And so what I would say to your listeners is, if it matters enough to the bad guys to try to take, it should matter enough to the good guys to try to keep. And so, you know, idealistically, and I wouldn't put the majority odds on this, but idealistically, we would take the thing back and we would recover it, and it would be based and it would honor Christ and it would push healthy doctrine and ethics, and it would be a thorn in the bad guy's side. And more importantly, it would be a useful resource to King Jesus. So that's the goal. The second version of this, though, is what I mentioned earlier with Princeton. So we probably all look up to Machen. We love old Princeton. Eventually, they said, you know, the Presbyterian said Machen had to go. And he did. And he went and started Westminster. And he started the OPC. And Princeton became one of the top two or three institutions outside of the federal government in our society, pumping toxicity and filth and sin and deception into the elites in society. And so if I could go back in time, I would tell Machen, hey man, you got to have a two-pronged plan. You've either got to recover this thing or you have to shut it down. And so going back to my point that the bad guys want it, we should care enough about the legacy of the Southern Baptist Convention as a set of institutions to either recover the thing and make sure the bad guys don't get their want on that, or we should skillfully shut it down so that they don't have it a resource. I mean, I'm not the first one to say this. Maybe Aaron Wren was, but liberals can't build anything. They're fundamentally parasitic. So they can't build anything, but they can sure take something over and use it. And my prayer is that the Lord will allow us to recover the SBC. And if he doesn't, then in his judgment, that he would grant those of us who want to honor him the secondary good or the secondary win of just seeing the thing shut down. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. No, I appreciate it, Jeff. Jeff, you're a sharp guy. You're a pastor for those who are joining the stream. What's the name of your church?
Midway Baptist.
Okay, Midway Baptist Church in Tennessee, and you've been involved with the SBC in various ways and capacities. I saw recently there was an article stating you were on the board for the ERLC, and I had to ask you about that because I was like, "Are you?" You were, I guess.
News Global is not filled with journalists. That's what's going on there. So that delighted me. I had a good laugh at that. I let them have it up there. That's fine.
Yeah. Baptist News Global has never been a journalism outlet for as long as I've been looking at their articles. Not that I do that often, but there's a lot of questions that came to my mind, challenging ones that I want to ask you, hard ones. But I do want to go to some of the folks in chat. So I'm going to go to there's someone named Anonymous Layman who's been waiting the entire podcast. So we don't know his name, Anonymous, but he's going to, I guess, make a point or ask you a question. So, Mr. Anonymous Layman, can you hear us?
Hey, John. Hi, Jeff. How are you doing?
Hey, man. Doing well.
Thanks for coming on the podcast, and congratulations. If you didn't have a target on your forehead yet, now you do. but you know, any suffering here on this earth will be rewarded in heaven. So, quick, just a couple of questions. So, John, did you say that Jeff had worked with the Conservative Baptist Network?
I'll let Jeff answer that.
Yeah, so I'm primarily working with a group called SBC Underground. Uh-huh. We're part of the Servants and Heralds Network. We're friends with the CBN. We try to kind of support what they're doing. They're bigger. They're just frankly a bigger deal than we are. They're better resourced. And so I'm a fan of theirs, try to support what they can, but I don't get, I get invited to some of the meetings, but I don't get invited as one of the leaders of the meetings.
Okay. Well, I guess in general, then, just thank you for the work that all you guys are doing on that front. I actually agree with you that fighting to take over the SBC is worth it for some of the reasons you listed and some of the other reasons that have been put out there over the years. And that the answer to this problem is lies somewhere in us coalescing like minds together. And not going totally independent churches all over. And even though I love John and I'm a big supporter of him, that might be somewhere where he and I disagree, but that's okay, because John is probably a better representation of Jesus on earth than I could ever be. So
I don't know about that.
But still, well, you are in terms of nicety. I'm less nice than you are. But so here's my question. Are we still under the assumption that if there was a perfect long distance electronic voting, no issues with that, and all of the collection of churches that made up the SBC could vote through that the voting would be substantially different than the way that the convention does?
John, you mind if I run at that? I mean,
no, that's your yeah, that's all for you, Jeff. Yep.
Yeah. So, brother, I still believe that, yes. I am in deep Southern Baptist territory. I'm in the homeland areas, right? And every church I know, when I talk to them, if they're willing to find me credible, because one of the real challenges we face is low information among Southern Baptist churches. They're not on social media. Not all of them are listening to shows like John's. And so they think the conservative resurgence was fought. Adrian Rogers and Al Mohler fixed it, and everything's good, man. Let's roll. And they're busy doing the things that make society function. They're building families and churches, and they're working every day. And so they're not tuned in the way we are. But if they will find me credible when I talk to them, you can just see this ghastly look of horror fall over their faces. It would be so much more feasible to get a small church like that. And most SBC churches are small. To get them involved in the process, if they could drive to their state capital, for instance, to participate. So I'm in Tennessee. If I could go to Nashville, or even if I could go to Atlanta every year, those churches can feasibly say, I can go participate in that. When it's in Anaheim, even when it's in New Orleans for a lot of churches, it's going to be in Utah in 2 years. That's just, you know, I'm asking to go to Mars, basically. A lot of their pastors are bivocational. They have to take vacation time. And I did that. I was bivocational for a number of years, paid my own way to the convention, both state and national. It's a burden on your family. It's brutal, particularly when you want to use that vacation time with your family. So the thing I would say to you is the bad guys know that too. Now it's going to, you know, it's going to open it up for more bad guys to come for sure. But the bad guys fight the idea of ever doing remote voting. They fight it tooth and claw. And it's because they know if we make that move, it's much harder for them to control. And look, I would support that just for the chance of increasing chaos and bogging the system down. These guys control the microphones. They control, there's this huge amount of inertia that comes off the platform because there's so much goodwill from the participants. It would be a win for us if we got remote voting just because it would help be a clog in the system. So ideally, what I think would be, you know, if I could snap my fingers and make it happen, is where all the cities that we keep in rotation for the annual meeting, so Nashville, Georgia, Atlanta, New Orleans, Utah, Salt Lake, like I just said, those should be hubs. And you ought to be able to go to that hub and the voting should be collected at that hub and then aggregated for the decision of the Southern Baptist Convention. But brother, until we push these guys out, again, they know. This is where you can read the bad guys and go, oh, that's something that would cost them. That's why they hate it so bad. So I'm going to keep pushing for that.
Tracking. And so I asked that not because I think that a massive voting thing like that would be a good idea, but just to understand that we still feel like the pulse is that we're more conservative across the board than what the convention reflects. And so then that leads into my second question, which you sort of touched on some of these points that essentially, what are the most difficult aspects about getting conservatives to the convention? And if it's those issues of just there's a lack of people who understand what has been going on over the last few years, as well as the distance issue. You know, that was a problem we had 3 years ago still. So those things have been outstanding. So what is the solution going forward to try to help address that? Because when I go to certain organizations, and I won't mention them, but when I go to them and I ask, like, hey, do you know of anybody that would like to go but doesn't have the financial support or something like that, is there any, you know, is anybody there need some help so that qualified messengers who otherwise would go, but there's some sort of issue there where somebody like me, a layman, could maybe help them out, get them there? You know, are there any plans around, you know, doing something differently than we've done in the last 3 years?
Hey, with that question, is it all right if I take you out of the chat, anonymous layman? Because we do have other people that are waiting to come in. Was that your final question?
Yes, sir, it was.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate it. So, Jeff, what do you think?
Man, we need laymen doing exactly what you described. And the challenge that you just brought up is the challenge that for 3 years, the groups I'm in have been trying to think through. The original conservative resurgence mechanized and mobilized small churches. How do we do that now? You would think it would be easier in the age of mass media and social media, but it seems to be harder because we tend to, you know, if you're strapped for cash, you think a tweet, Facebook post, something like that is going to carry, and it just doesn't. It just does not carry the kind of buy-in that we're looking to see. And so there have been people who've talked about mass mailings. There have been people who've talked about hiring an individual to just kind of go around to churches and say, we want to make a pitch to you about how we see the Southern Baptist Convention and how you can participate if you agree with us. You know, it's hard for guys who preach every week, particularly multiple times, to take time to drive to another church and tell them. And so if I could kind of snap my fingers, we would have a budget to not just send people, although I think that's useful. Tom Buck has organized that. Jared Moore, my buddy, has organized that in years past. We're happy to help organize people who want to send money to send good people to the convention. And you may be aware that the North American Mission Board is using cooperative program funds to send their own people to vote in their interest, which kind of breaks our polity. So we want to do that. And I'm always happy to help facilitate that. But we also could use some help beating on doors at local churches, sending them direct kind of snail mail communication, getting open doors at local state newspapers. That would be helpful too. And those are the things we're kicking around because nobody has kind of found the magic bullet or the magic key to unlock that. And we're still looking.
Yeah, this is a ground game question. Some pastor reached out, and I think it was a pastor, said to me, look, I got more emails from Rick Warren than I did from the Conservative Baptist Network this year. And that's the sense I get from a lot of people is like there's not the organization for whatever reason to be able to let people know, to get the information out there that, I mean, look, I didn't even know that there was a fund. Was there even a fund this year to get people to the convention? I hadn't heard of that.
I hadn't heard about it this year.
Yeah. I didn't think there was. So those necessary mechanisms just aren't in place for some reason. And that would be, you would need that in order to then elect a president, in order to get people on committees. And then once you stack all the committees, and that's going to take at least 5 years to a decade, then you can talk about maybe doing remote voting. I mean, that's how far away I think we are realistically from that. Would you agree?
Yeah, we're a ways out. So you know, I think if you look at the historical records, conservative estimates of how long it took the conservative resurgence to really get a win in a significant way was about 10 years. And they had the cultural support that came with a more robust cultural Christianity backing them. They weren't fighting a group of people who knew that strategy and had sealed off the gates, right? And so we're facing a much more uphill climb. And I mean, you're right that more organization is needed. I think one of the things that's true for conservatives is that they kind of see it as creepy and gross to politically organize. And I think one of the reasons that the original conservative resurgence actually got some victories is that Paige Patterson was happy to say, this is what it takes. I'm going to do it, and organized. And the Lord blessed it and gave us a win. Now, I mean, I realize, you know, Paul Pressler has some issues or whatnot, but Paige has been vindicated. I thank God for Paige Patterson. And we need more of that. And I actually think that there's probably some indication people are starting to wake up to that as well. The apparatus is just not in place yet, and we got to get there because we're fighting, again, uphill. Yeah.
Jeff, there's folks in chat. I just want to acknowledge them that are asking questions. Well, I'll give you, here's one. David CRT is stupid said, Tom Buck says, Paul explicitly links the mission of the church with maintaining sound doctrine in the church, yet y'all stay in and partner with terrible doctrine, wolves, goats, and hirelings. I want to get to this because I think this is the crux of the matter, is the partnership question. Before we do that, so I'm just giving you, you know, mental note, let's get there. I want to bring in one of our callers here, Christopher Cunningham. He is he's been chomping at the bit to ask some questions or make a point, I guess. Hey, Christopher, can you hear us?
Yes, sir, I can. How are you doing, Jeff?
What's up, brother? Good to see you, or I guess
here. I was wondering if you remembered me.
Hey, oh, yeah, dude, I saw you on the mics this year.
It was short. So I noticed, so last year our church quit giving entirely. We ain't giving nothing. We had some people that are in a nursing home that every year they give to the Lottie Moon, like they designate it, you know. And so that is what afforded us three messengers. And but other than that, we're not going to financially give to the co-op. But a year ago, I was more inclined to just, hey, guys, we just got to pull out and leave. This year, I noticed something, and this is what it is. The ignorance among just your average, like, people are just ignorant of what's going on and what it will take. I believe, like, when I saw everyone with a resounding no, kick out Rick Warren, like, that's easy, right? Like, they recognize that's bad. Let's put it out. But everything else, they're so easily tricked. And they're sheep, right? And like, you see,
are nailing it. You are nailing it, because the Rick Warren thing actually does kind of reveal what's left in the SBC. It was so obvious.
Right.
As a reminder. Yeah. I mean, John's last episode had a lot of credibility to it, but a lot of what happened there is that it was so obviously a liberalizing move that people were actually energized to fight it. And it kind of speaks to what's left in the SBC. But it's just so hard for them to see what J.D. Greer is doing is also what Rick Warren is doing.
Yes. And this is what it will take. I know that. So I started like a Facebook page, and I'm going. Last year I spoke at four or five different Baptist churches about what's going on. You know,
God bless you.
And this is like, I know what the magic bullet, the solution. This is what it is. It's the same thing it was.
We lost the magic bullet. Christopher,
oh no.
Christopher, right, that there. Was like, if you had the solution to all the problems and you were about to give, oh, you're back. Okay. Yeah. All right. Good.
So much for calling me. Great time. It's the same thing.
Ben Cole. I don't know Ben Cole, but someone in chats kept saying Ben Cole's cutting the mics. Whoever Ben Cole is, but did he cut your microphone off there?
It's Bart Barber. Oh, hey.
Chris, you're in Texas, and so is Ben. What's your back, man? Yeah. What's your six?
Hey. What it's going to take is it's going to take the pastors to have a renewed burden for those that are ignorant. And I don't say that in a mean way. To those that are fleeced, I guess. Man, I wish there, I'm not a very like brilliant man at speaking, but they're going to have to go, and with not a mean attitude, because these people, like, it's like, if you look at when I got up to speak, man, everyone laughed. Like, hey, who is this young man, you know? And you can go, it's going to take time, work, and realizing that we may not win. But I'm a fourth generation Southern Baptist pastor, and I'm not letting them just going to walk away. I'm not going to give to it, but I will at least be willing to go there and say, hey, this is wrong. And, you know, missions dignity, man, they took care of my grandmother while she was in the nursing home. And like,
Mission dignity is the best reason to stay involved in the SBC. Honest to goodness, it's the best reason.
And with what happened during my time at SWIB, it's like, I believe what it's going to take is it's going to take men like you and I going to those. See, we could do the virtual voting, but I think it would be actually devastating for us, because people are still kind of, they're not going to know. And then let the liberals get a hold of that. Watch what they do. I mean, come on, let's be real. And so I think that it's going to take. I met a few guys that live around Indianapolis, and I'm planning on going there a couple days early, and I'm going to load up my church van, and next year I'm bringing the half-mile hailer with me. They can cut my microphone all they want, but I am going to be heard.
I love you, man. I love you.
That's great. I think it is going to take, like, if you hear this, like, if you're a pastor, you're someone, you know, most people don't recognize bad doctrine in churches, let alone at the SBC. So I think that, unfortunately, that's just how it is. But I think if we're like, hey, you know, we really need to be fighting for, you know, like, we need to stand up and make sure the missionaries aren't being robbed. Your average messenger say, whoa, hold up, messenger's being robbed. And say, yeah, let me. And give them something that they can hold on to and read. Because here's the thing. The men in the convention are weak. If you win the hearts of the ladies, I'm telling you, that's going to be it. You have to reach the ladies. And unfortunately, in your average SBC church, most of the women are doing the work anyway. So go, and I can tell you right now, I've got renewed hope and renewed vigor. And I don't care if I'm the last one to stand. I'm at least going to say what's right and wrong.
Yeah, Christopher, thank you so much for that.
Thank you, John.
Encouraging, thank you, I know, Jeff. To Jeff. And, you know, Jeff, you're going to have to win the ladies. You have to win the ladies. That's what I'm hearing. Females of both varieties, right?
That's exactly right.
That seems to be one of the problems, is making the message palatable for the room. And this is, again, the difference in strategies in my mind. There's one strategy that says win the room, and I guess you could mix these two, but the other one says bring your friends, right? And the bring your friends hasn't panned out. That's the ground game problem. The win the room thing has really been what I think CBN and people who are conservative there have been trying to do. But I think Christopher just nailed it. You have to have, you have to win the ladies. You have to make an argument that's going to be emotionally compelling. And once you go down that road, we all know that that's a slide towards the left. They're brilliant at using emotional arguments, and not even arguments sometimes, just melodrama to manipulate. So, I mean, I think that's spot on. It sounds like you're agreeing with that.
Yeah, there's a bunch from Chris there. I'd like to comment, if I can go back to David, whose comment popped up on screen before Chris started talking, and dovetail them. You know, the idea of partnering, ask JD Greer if I'm partnering with him. Ask Bart Barber if I'm partnering with him. See what the bad guys say about a nobody like me named Jeff Wright. Most of their shots are taken at Founders Ministries. Some are taken at CBN. But both Todd Unzicker and Bart Barber used phrasing that I've helped make common to describe them. So David, I think, is a good guy. We have been Twitter friends and then not Twitter friends. I'm not in partnership with them. What Chris said is right. A church should wisely give exactly the amount of money that authorizes them to send the precise number of messengers they want to send and no more. And they should aim that giving very precisely, which the Southern Baptist Convention can let you do. I'm not interested in partnering with evil, but what what Christopher laid out there is what people should do. The problem he identified is also correct. We are an emotive convention when it comes to the annual meeting. And that's one of the things that I didn't calculate well early on. Forthright, masculine disagreement, Track says, mean-spirited and unfraternal among both women who are there with their husbands on sort of a church-funded quasi-vacation and the effeminate men who have either been shaped by them or shaped to appeal to them. Right. I mean, so many man tears at this year's annual meeting. And so every time you get up and even say something that's very appropriate, I think our president is wrong on this issue that he's, you know, Bart Barber gets on Twitter and loses his mind all the time. You get up and say, I think our moderator's a little biased here. Well, that tracks is just very angry. So I do think we have a rhetorical approach that needs to be dialed in. You know, you just got to kind of change to do what's effective. But to John's point, you are accommodating unhealthy things. And so there has to be a sense of what kind of missionaries do. I want to be real clear about this. Missionaries have to think about the culture they're trying to reach and faithfully speak to that culture in the way that they're best prepared to receive, right? The gospel is an offense in and of itself. We try not to add additional offenses to the gospel. And I think people on my side of the equation are going to have to start thinking of the average annual meeting messenger as something like a missions target and say, how do we self-consciously maintain our identity, recognize what is and is not appropriate, but as far as we're able to appropriately do so, speak to them in a way that they can understand. I'm not going to get up and cry, but I teach rhetoric. You have to consider your audience. You have to consider not just the logos content, but you have to consider ethos and pathos. And so it's a tension, John. I don't think it's unworkable with integrity, but it is something we have to think about the annual meeting as a missions field.
Good thoughts, Jeff. We're going to go to Patrick in a moment. So Patrick, if you'd unmute your microphone, if you want to participate. I think there's two kind of issues here, Jeff. There's like the 2 Corinthians 6 issue. What partnership has light with darkness? And people are looking at that saying, hey, the leaders in these conventions and these entities, this isn't light, this is darkness. We shouldn't partner with them. And then there's the issue of like Luke 6 being financially wise. And so that's a matter of prudence. And is this a wise use of funds, even though a lot of pastors are not sending what they would normally send to the convention? That's still a lot of time to go to the convention. There's a lot of expenses in that. And So, you know, is this a wise investment if the purpose is for ministry? Because I think a lot of pastors didn't sign up to missionaries to the SBC. They signed up to do missions with the SBC, sure. Helping to cooperate and fund that. So I guess this is one of the questions is, when you have, and I don't know if you agree with me here, you can correct me if you don't think that this is the case, but when you have a situation where forget about partnering with Danny Akin and J.D. Greer, I mean, you have to, as a conservative now, it seems like, partner with Nine Marks Ministries, with Southern Seminary, with TGC board members in order to do anything. Like they're going to have a share in your political victories, if there are any political victories. And then when that happens, the expectation is in politics, you reward those people. If it's Southern Seminary that helped get you over the line, and if they're the drivers, and they were, I think, it was, you know, Al Mohler, Mike Law from Nine Marks, it was... you had Sanchez from TGC. Like, those are the guys that drove the conservative gains. Not that you didn't help, you did. But if those are the guys that are smiling for the cameras, then even if you got them over the line, they're going to expect that they have a seat at the table, at the very least, if not control of that table. So how do you navigate that? Not just the partnership with blatantly obvious, here are the liberals, but also, oh no, or the corrupt individuals, I should say, but oh no, these guys, hey, they've been bad on Me Too. They've been bad on CRT, but now because they agree with us on this one point, we can partner with them. I think that's a hard sell for many churches. So sorry, I've been ranting here, but
no.
If you could address it.
Yeah. So it's kind of a long answer, just pre-warning. Man, it just left my mind. The guy who wrote A Secular Age, the sort of sociologist philosopher, Charles something, really in vogue a couple of years ago, wrote a book called A Secular Age that I think really makes a compelling case that institutions matter. The institutions have to be in place to transmit values. And so you have to have, I mean, you can have a populace that is right-minded, but if you don't have institutions for those things to coalesce in and then hand off to next generations, it's going to be lost. And you can see a version of that with the long march through the institutions. The communists have been running for quite some time. What has happened with critical race theory? They know that too. So I would go back to my earlier statement. We educate a lot of seminarians. We have really important apparatus, the kind of things that won't be rebuilt in my grandchildren's lifetime if they're lost. They matter to mission long term. And so again, I'm going to say to that person who wants to partner on missions, you know, it's kind of the Frodo and Gandalf thing, right? I wish I'd been born in a different time, but this is the time we're born into. Machen, I wish he had been alive when he didn't have to get ran out the existing Presbyterian structures, but he did what he could in that time. I think that's our calling too. And so I want to win this thing so I can just be happy to partner, or I want to shut it down. And I also think I'll talk about this a little bit more. I do think it's time to build some alternative stuff as well. I'm part of a group building something called Credo Alliance. American Reformer is doing a good job developing a kind of a platform for healthier content. John, you're doing a good job. Alternative Media is doing those things. So that's very important. But we also have to pay attention to the things that already exist and try to recover them, make use of them, and keep them out of the bad guys' hands. So again, I'm going to come back to what me and Christopher talked about. Don't partner with them. Don't financially partner with them. Figure out something like Mission Dignity that you can support. Figure out the dollar amount that lets you get as many messengers as want to go make it awful for the liberals at the annual meeting, and give that precise dollar amount and give everything else wherever you want to go. That's what I'm leading my church to do. And then, you know, partner with, you know, I'm reaching out to, there's a Baptist World Mission, I think is Alec Kochman. I don't think I've got his organization name right. We want a replacement with American Mission Board. So we're reaching out to them. Do all that, but give $250 or whatever it is to something you do support within the SBC umbrella. So you can go make life miserable for the bad guys. And I think that's just part of where we're at in God's providence in this era of church history.
Well, lots of stuff to talk about. We have to probably land the plane here soon, though. Josh Abitoy and I were chatting last night, actually. He wished he could be here. He had a conflict, yeah. But he seems pretty confident that people like him can either stay in the driver's seat if you already have the driver's seat, or you can, take the driver's seat, so to speak. And so this coalition building is not going to be to the advantage of Nine Marks or Southern Seminary as much, perhaps, as it will be for guys like you. And I don't want to misrepresent him. Maybe he would change that. That was my understanding of what he was trying to get at. So that seems to me to be something that would be absolutely necessary. You would have to see positive momentum and real conservatives, theological conservatives, uncompromising kinds that are driving that change, like the first conservative resurgence, identifiable leaders. That would be, in my mind, a necessary thing, or else it's going to be what you just said. You're going to have to say, this is done. We have to leave. So what's the ending point? When do you leave?
And I failed to answer that part of your question, so I'm sorry about that. So to the point about coalition building, I'm happy to work with a lot of different groups on particular issues. right? Through a local political party, I work with a Muslim to shut down an abortion mill. I'm not going to be ecumenical, but I will, or a secular pro-life person. I work with them to shut down an abortion mill. So Nine Marks is woke. Capitol Hill Baptist Church is probably the biggest exporter of woke leaders through their internship program. I want nothing to do with them. I used to be the biggest Nine Marks guy in the world. Don't want anything to do with them. But if they're going to come to the table and vote against egalitarianism, praise the Lord, man. I'm not aiming any fire that way on that issue. Let's just do that. But we have to, we just have to make use of them. And then where they balk, we discard them. So I'm with you. Now, here's where I'm going to register a minority opinion. Al Mohler was incredibly important to Nine Marks, probably, and to people like Denny Burke and some of those guys to kind of feel comfortable to come in and oppose Rick Warren. But I, you know, in an alternative universe, I wonder if Rick Warren hadn't been voted out even without Al Mohler. So the way that played out, Fern Creek's pastor got up and put in front of everybody what it was going to look like if we did not vote Rick Warren out.
The optics were horrendous.
I mean, well, for our cause, it was glorious.
It was great,
right?
Yeah.
Praise God. Right. But for her cause, terrible. Although I did appreciate her dig at pastors who shut down for COVID. Then Rick Warren gets up, and I've totally flipped on what I think Rick Warren was doing. I thought Rick Warren wanted to kind of become the commander of the SBC ship last year at Anaheim. And I think the liberals wanted to give him that platform to undercut conservatives in Anaheim. And they kind of released a monster they couldn't control. But I told people after watching his speech, that was a Jerry Maguire speech. He, you know, Al Mohler, you suck. And you guys who don't like women suck. Who's coming with me? And I fully expect Rick Warren to, you know, be calling for some kind of new denomination. That was not a speech calibrated to win people to his side. It was in the sense of like, we're going to take the SBC in this direction. It was a speech calibrated to say, all these people suck and you should walk out with me. And so Rick Warren, I mean, he set up his own defeat. I'm thankful Al Mohler went to the table and spoke. I'm not trying to say that, but God only knows. I wonder if the vote still wouldn't have went.
And I think some on the left are leaving. Dwight McKissick, I believe, is leaving, right?
He threatens it all the time. But here's the thing with SBC. It's the only place where Dwight is special in the sense of people really run to hear his opinion.
Yeah.
And so Beth Moore eventually left, but it was kind of the same deal for her. And Beth Moore is much more irrelevant now that she's not in the SBC. She has to kind of maintain relevancy by talking about the SBC. I fully expect Dwight to have to do the same thing. If he rolls out, he's just one of many, but here in the SBC, people really feel a burden to cater to him. So I don't know that he's leaving.
Yeah, that's a good point. And you just reminded me, that's been this case for like 4 years at least where he threatens that. Time. Okay. So, all right. So I guess Patrick, I don't think he's coming on the podcast. So I think that's about it. I think you've laid out the issues well, Jeff. I think maybe the conclusion here would be, if you are going to stay in the Southern Baptist Convention and try to do so in an uncompromising way, it means that you have to assess the giving and make it the minimum. It means that you have to be up for real war. So, you know, you can't come with the assumption that you're there to partner for ministry as much as you are there to take over the SBC so it can once again do ministry. Two different mindsets. There's a difference between wartime leaders and peacetime leaders. And I think that the third thing perhaps here is that there needs to be some changes on the ground pretty quick in order to make this even possible. So you need a ground game and you need identifiable, strong leaders who are willing to pull punches and then leave if things don't seem to turn around. My summation of what you've been saying. I've of course, people know, listen to this podcast. I've been advocating leave the SBC for years, but I think it's helpful to hear what you have to say. And there are faithful pastors who are still fighting the good fight in there. And I'm thankful because at the very least, even if, you're not giving enough to really sustain the denomination and you're fighting, you're a witness. You're showing everyone in that room, hey, this is the truth. You guys are going in the wrong direction. And there's that prophetic witness that Russell Moore always talks about, but doesn't ever give. So we have, Tom Rush is in the stream. I'll just say Tom Rush says, good word, gentlemen. And one more thing, I know you have a point to make, but someone paid for a comment. 47,000 SBC churches, Best guess as to what percentage have been contacted by good guys in a meaningful way.
So I'd say less than 10%. I mean,
yeah, that's
if we had, I wish we had somebody we could pay just to do that, just to spend their day doing it. Cause guys like me, we're pastoring, we're raising families, we're trying to do other stuff too. I'm not saying that means we shouldn't do it, but I just wish we had somebody to make that happen. Can I make a pitch real quick, John? And I'm so thankful for this chance to come on. Brother, we won multiple battles at the SBC this year, and we haven't for years, but we did lose the war. The battle was Rick Warren. The other battle was the Mike Law Amendment. The war that we lost was the Presidential High Council Committee, and they, you know, the platform pulled out all stops to get it done. So, again, I don't have rose-colored glasses on, although it is encouraging to win a few. Here's what I'd like to say to your audience, and I told John I wanted to come on. In part, one of my motivations was I want to tell you guys who listen to John, if you have any resonance with what I'm saying, or if you're in a church that you love and really care for, but your pastor is just low information, I want you to know I'm the guy that can put you in touch with people that you want to work with who will be an encouragement to you. And what I find when I'm at the mic and I'm talking to dissident voices at the microphone at the annual meeting, it's getting to the point. Now, I'm no spring chicken. I'm not also super old yet, but so many of the people at the microphone with the right perspective are young men who are seeing this clearly. They care enough to try to battle, to keep and move the ball forward even. If you're a young man out there in particular who is looking for a place to exercise your energies faithfully in a way that's going to impact evangelicalism, you have brothers in the SBC, and I would love to facilitate you connecting with them. I'm on Twitter all the time, Merely J. Wright, SBC Underground, Credo Alliance. Those are all groups that I'm working with to try to do some of this. And brothers, listen, if you know, this is going to sound grandiose to some of y'all, but there's a real sense, which this is true. If you have ever wondered what it would be like to be in Robin Hood's band of merry men, kind of exercising guerrilla tactics against the sheriff of Nottingham, it's going to take a particularly literary kind of guy to resonate with that the way I'm hoping it will. But if you ever wondered how that feels, you have brothers doing that in the SBC, and it is deeply fun. We have a great time doing this stuff. And the Lord in his blessing has provided us the most wonderful group of enemies. You won't find effeminacy like that outside of a drag queen story hour. They are goofballs. They are just, I mean, it's just so easy to have a good time fighting these guys. And so let's get together. Let's link arms. Either the Lord's going to give us the victory in taking the thing, or the Lord is going to profitably shut the thing down. But brothers, we are fighting a group that we can win against. And John, to your question, the scenario that I think is less likely, but what I've been very clear with my church is I'm staying in until they run me out. What I hope is that J.D. Greer and those guys, and I'm going to stay in at the bare minimum dollar amount, just to be clear. But I want them to come up with a mechanism whereby they have to get me out, because I want them to feel like they are trapped in there with me until they figure out a way to get me out of there. So I'm kind of hardcore that way. But man, it's fun. That's the last thing I tell you. We need guys to show up and help with the ground game. The abortion abolitionists in the SBC are top notch. You're going to want to work with those brothers. They're preaching at abortion meals and then coming to the SBC and taking liberal scalps. The brothers that I meet are good guys. They're great to hang out with. And man, we can actually put you to use pretty quickly in meaningful ways in the SBC. So if any of this resonates with you, man, let's talk. Hit me up on social media.
So if you, if what I'm hearing is correct, Jeff wants you to start the kickoff of White Boy Summer at the SBC annual meeting with his band of merry men, where you're going to be based and have fun.
Be based and have fun is exactly right. What we're doing right now.
I snuck in the White Boy Summer for Noah Alvarenga, who's often in the chat, and he's like the primary advocate. So Jeff, where can people contact you? People are asking for links. What do they do?
Okay, so again, I'm active all the time on Twitter at Merely J. Wright. I'm involved with a bunch of good guys at a group called Servants and Heralds. We publish tweets, things like that. Part of that is SBC Underground, Southern Baptist Convention Underground. that's active on Twitter. And then I'm working with some good brothers to form an alternative organization called Credo Alliance that's focused on Credo Baptist theology, Christian education, political engagement. And so those would be the ways to reach out to me. Hit me up on Twitter, follow SBC Underground, follow Credo Alliance, send me a DM. And man, I really think we can lock arms and have a good time doing some good work that will, you know, if the Lord is not returning, he may, but if the Lord doesn't return, you know, for the next several generations, our work in the SBC will matter in some fashion in future generations. So let's get in.
Okay. So check out Credo Alliance, check out Servants and Heralds. You can find Jeff on social media, Facebook. What's your Twitter handle?
Merely J Wright.
Merely J Wright. And it's WRIGHT.
I mean, I'm on Gab, everywhere else. I lost this handle on most, on Twitter, but on most platforms, I'm at Wright Jeff. So.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Thank you, brother, for joining us. I appreciate it. God bless. And I definitely hope you're right. and the good wins out in the end here. And we know ultimately that will take place when Christ comes.
Well, thank you so much, John. And do have Josh Abitoy on. He's one of the good guys that people should connect with. And man, just keep up the good work. I appreciate what you're doing.
All right. God bless.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.